my clothes. Oh, Mama, don't you pass so quickly. The smell of burning leaves passes, and oil beckons me toward reality, to a place where I reside but never quite call home. This is an old human being learning the way of all flesh. I press my cheeks against the child's. He is 10 feet away and round and redly smiles. His shirt is black. His neutral eyes open wide to see what they choose. The village is far away. The rage and the rag become my nakedness. I imagine I'm in Brooklyn where the wandering junk dealer wakes me up. I'm frustrated. My uncle's fishing trip was a slow, lazy fluke. The women, so crooked and deceptive, tear my adolescent insides apart and dump them on a pile of burning leaves out front. I rise upward, a fool of smoke, my shirt waving from the window ledge. Mama, don't you tear my... Up, up, little smoke, through the distancing branches. Up, up, the roots, the clouds, my skin.
As far as surrealism in Brooklyn again, I think the poem on the first CD that personifies the most my growing up in Brooklyn is the one about the tale of Krishna.
Uh-huh.
Where I say, you know, I talk about leaving the Fassbinder, the movie, and a part of that poem was based on a weird documentary I saw about a village that worshipped Krishna. I don't remember if I made up the thing about Krishna leaving his shirt, but that or that was actually part of how the people envisioned Krishna as, you know, if you don't come back to help us, please come back for your shirt. A kind of way of getting their Krishna back one way or the other after he left as a child to go out in the world and figure out whether he was really Krishna or not.
Yeah.
And that's very, you know, that goes very heavily into my childhood with the smell of old smoke and burning leaves and the rag man outside the window. And that was all...
Wow.
Yeah, I could see that all in Brooklyn where I grew up. And like I mentioned to you the first time, I don't know why, but because of the smoke and the burning leaves.
And these were things you actually smelled, saw, and...
Oh, yeah.
Every day, occasionally around your neighborhood. And the rag man was who?
There was a rag man. I don't know who he was. I never talked to him. I usually heard him from out my little... You know, in this apartment that they lived in, in Brooklyn... I had two different bedrooms at different times growing up, and the one in the front of the house, I could never quite make out what the rag man was shouting, because I think it was in Yiddish or some weird language, but it always sounded like he was shouting, "I kick coke," and I could never make it out, but he...
Did he stay in the same neighborhood quite a bit?
Oh, yeah, he wasn't actually... he actually wasn't a crazy wanderer. He was a guy who bought and sold rags.
But you just couldn't understand what he was saying.
No, because I don't think he was saying it in English.
Right.
My feeling is he was saying it in Yiddish.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I never bothered to ask. And for my entire life, it sounded really like he was saying, "I kick coke." And he might have been saying, "I sell old clothes."
Right.
You know, and...
And then the smell of burning leaves and these other things.
The smell of burning leaves also was because... And I'm sure there are places they still do it. The last time I saw it done was a few years ago when I used to hang out in Woodstock. You know, I walked by this huge house with a huge front yard where the people were burning their autumn leaves. And in Brooklyn, on my block, you know, we used to use the leaves to play King of the Mountain or whatever that game is in. We used to climb up on the leaves, and we used to like to kick the leaves. And then there was always some period where one neighbor, after raking all the leaves into a big pile in the gutter, would burn them. And the smell of burning leaves is one of the great smells of, I was going to say, of humanity, but it's kind of, well, it is, I guess, because it's
maybe of your own palate, though.
On my own palate, the smell of burning leaves was great. So that's the kind of thing. So yeah, Brooklyn always remained very strong part of my psyche, and I think it still is now. I mean, it plays. I think it's continually. Even though I try to avoid going there, I've been going to places I never thought I'd go to because a lot of the cultural scene has moved to Brooklyn. But I mean, the part that really plays the important part in my psyche is still where I grew up, in Brighton Beach and places like that that are indelibly etched into my brain.
You're listening to If Music Could Talk, and this is 97.3 FM, Richmond Indie Radio. Did you know that Elwood Thompson's Natural Market actively seeks out local farmers and gives them a venue to sell their products? Now you can help yourself to fresh tomatoes, melons, and other delights, and help sustain organic farming in our community at the same time. Located at the corner of Elwood and Thompson Streets since 1989, Elwood Thompson's Natural Market is dangerously close to becoming a Richmond tradition. Their knowledgeable staff, famous delicatessen, and wide range of herbal and other products have made Elwood Thompson's a favorite for Richmonders who care about their health and the health of the planet. You can also pick up your WRIR bumper stickers at the register. More information is available at 804-359-7525 or on the web at www.elwoodthompsons.com. Your body will thank you. So here is a poem off of the Incomplete Directions CD by Steve Dalashinsky, which is called Night Viewing. And this CD features musicians such as Thurston Moore, Vernon Reed, and a whole slew of other great artists, as well as the poems of Steve Dalashinsky. So here's Night Viewing, perfect for as the night falls here in Richmond, Virginia.
People just too weird. They dance for nothing. When ritual become nothing, a mark on the floor that can be approached but not gone beyond. They eat for nothing and love for nothing and sing for nothing, are good for Wednesday. Let's get together Wednesday. I can't. I have to bury my mother's ashes. Well, does that take all day? For people are good for ashes. Birds dance, people weird. Try to be things for nothing, costumed in health. Me, take my rotting body to its end. Don't try, don't be. Use the limited language given me. People fly, wings of fire, burn for nothing. Poor kids at the end of their dance, for nothing. To shit, he says. Thin line on a thinner wall. People do things for nothing, to be something. A safe house. Whose Holocaust is this anyway? I will stink by my end, anyhow, by way. Suicidaling along in this fantasy of why I do things. Why I think I do things. A spot on the floor for the dancer to step within. Kaleidoscopic shadows step within. People weird. They sing for nothing. The star is over, has passed the belly, has laid hands on and left directions. But the roots are abandoned. People build roads for nothing. Night viewing the cherry blossoms, illumined by their own pink light. For nothing.
To to me, I always get kind of trapped by my own idiotic, illogical way of thinking, because I always get back to the point, well, are people inherently good? And most of them don't go around really murdering each other. There's just a few.
Yeah.
So, all this kind of stuff, if we talk about the rhetoric in a lot of my stuff, I mean, yeah, you know, that's what it is. You know, people are always looking for these directions to go, and then, you know, they keep trying to find them, and they get lost all the time, and you know, because they're weird, Carl. They're just
people are too weird.
They're just too weird. I hate to say that, because, you know, there's some good stuff, I guess, out there. You know, I mean, and I'm,
well,
I'm
the music and the cherry blossoms.
Those cherry blossoms, they were beautiful, those cherry blossoms. They really took me by surprise.
In that particular poem, or the ones you recently saw? I was referring to the ones in Night Viewing.
I got to Japan right after the cherry blossoms were over, so I didn't get to see any cherry blossoms this year except in photographs. But when I wrote Night Viewing, I left some great music I had just seen. I think it was John Zorn and Sally Silver's duet, actually. The one thing I didn't do on this CD, and I didn't do on Phenomenon of Interference, which surprises me, is write when and where the poems took place. Because usually in every book I have out, I always state when and where, or if they're dedicated to particular people. Well, I can hear Blue is dedicated to Joseph Jarman, but I probably wrote it listening to, not Joseph Jarman, Derek Jarman. Then I probably wrote it listening to music, and I'm surprised that I didn't indicate that on any of these things. But Night Viewing, I had just left a concert, and I had started writing the poem at the concert, and I think I continued it walking down the street. I walked by this place on somewhere, I think it was on 7th Avenue. It might have even been a churchyard, because all I remember is a fence and a kind of spotlight, and the spotlight was on this tree of fantastic cherry blossoms. And I think the title Night Viewing came from that instance, and then meant something much bigger than that. But in Japan, because I was there once when the cherry blossoms were out, you know, the Japanese, they take out tops and they sit there and have their lunch, and they view the cherry blossoms.
They
particularly
view them
during the day, but
yeah,
it's a really big deal. You know, we do it once a year.
Make special little cakes and to go see the cherry blossoms.
Right. I mean, it's a whole thing. You know, we do it once a year in Botanic Gardens, you know, and I'm saying I'm happy they do it in Botanic Gardens, but it's not like it's a ritual. You know, that's a real ritual. So I think that instant was, you know, that's why that poem is named Night Viewing, although it has a much larger implications. And when I say in there something about what do we live for, and he said, I think the answer was the fish.
Yeah.
And the guy really said that to me.
Yeah. And then the rest of the poem is talking about dancing for nothing, being things for nothing. And people sort of view the cherry blossoms for no particular reason, too, except that they're blooming.
Totally. I mean, it's almost an idiotic act, but at least it's a kind of, it's kind of like dancing. I mean, dancing is not in most cases, dancing is a beautiful and harmless act. But viewing the cherry blossoms, I mean, how much more harmless can you get?
Yeah.
You're just kind of sitting under all these trees, and you're eating your lunch and eating special cherry blossom sweets, and you're viewing these beautiful cherry blossoms. I mean, that's one other thing that other animals don't do as much, although I think there are some animals out there that have a respect for nature, too. I mean, so that's why people are so weird, because they do so many things that are, you know, almost contrary to... to each other. You know, they you know, one minute they can spit on the sidewalk, and the next minute they can be buying their girlfriend flowers.
Well, I think there's a conflict in this poem too. I mean, about it brings up sort of the paradox where people do so many things for something too, for reasons, specific reasons. And this poem, you're saying people dance for nothing. and maybe I'm taking it the wrong way, but I think that's a beautiful thing that maybe us human animals don't do enough, is just do things for the sake of doing them rather than always having some deep reason that's carved in stone. And
but I don't want you to get me wrong in that poem. When I say they dance for nothing, and whatever else I say they do for nothing.
Yeah.
In that poem, I really meant, I didn't mean that you can dance without purpose and that that's a beautiful thing.
No.
I meant everything people do, they do for nothing. What is it that we're supposed to be, though? I mean, everybody seems to want to be something, even people who...
Yeah, well, what's it all for?
Yeah, what's it all for?
What's the show for it?
What, are you quoting something there?
Yeah.
What is the show for it?
The tall, thin tenor man, why he played Naima every week his way. He said, listen. I thought vehicle, beautiful vehicle, sensual melody, sinewy. Why do you play Naima every week, I ask. He says, listen. I am caught at the bottom of the empty glass with all those colorful crumpled candy wrappers, and my eyes spin like old vinyl I listened to 30 years ago, and my thoughts are penciled in by my great artist friend's balladeering. And I ask, why does he play Naima every week? His own way, but Naima just the same. He calls it to the other members of the trio. Naima. Then he plays it. Warm, soft woman that she is, fingers that they are, red animal that we all share somewhere. He needs her. He prays for her. He sees the opening in her name. Naima. Many have heard you. I am her, she whispers, syllabling through his reeds. I am an old wound, but a comforting one. I am an aristocrat, an artist, an old law. Why is the call always bottomless when there is Naima to play? Why, I ask, bottomless? Listen, he whispers. Listen. Thank you.
You're listening to WIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond Indie Radio. This is Music Could Talk in the background. Sorry to cut it short, but we only have a certain amount of time left, maybe 15 minutes. But that's Naima, the original. And before that, we heard Naima off of Steve Dalashinsky's Phenomena of Interference. Help end homelessness in Richmond by attending the hippest slumber party in Richmond, the 2006 Pajama Jam. Friday, September 29th from 7:30 to midnight at Plant Zero, 0 East 4th Street in Richmond. Great food and music, a sleepwear fashion show by VCU's Department of Fashion Design, and Best PJs contest. Sounds exciting. All in support of Virginia's supportive housing, a proven permanent solution to homelessness. For more information, log on to www.pajamajam2006.com or call Virginia Supportive Housing at 804-788-6825. Juneteenth recordings will be aired on WIR 97.3 FM Mondays at 12 noon, August. Juneteenth, also known as Freedom Day or Emancipation Day. It's an annual holiday in 14 states of the United States, celebrated on June 19th. It commemorates the announcement of the abolition of slavery in Texas. Also to be aired will be other recordings from around Richmond on the condition of the African-American diaspora in America. The first few weeks of late July will feature Paul Rusesabagina, who is the Rwandan hotel manager on whom the movie Hotel Rwanda is based. So tune in Mondays at 12 noon for Homespun C-SPAN.
And I just want to ask, why does he play Naima the same way every week?
That's okay. Charles Gale.
You're talking about records you listened to 30 years ago in this poem, too. What's Naima about? I mean, that's a beautiful song, and I'm going to play it up next. But
it's a fantastic song, and in this particular Naima poem, Charles was doing a gig at the Knitting Factory once a week for about 4 weeks. And that particular time, I've seen almost every Charles Gale gig in New York, and that particular time, for whatever reason, every week he played Naima. Mm. And when I said his way, it's because, you know, he wasn't trying to play it like Coltrane. You know, this is a few years ago, so I can't give you all the details, but he was just playing Naima every week his way. Yeah, I don't even actually remember, to be 100% honest with you, I don't remember if I actually asked Charles, why are you playing Naima? And he said, listen, that could all be poetic device. Whatever actually transpired, it's very possible I said, you know, why do you play Naima every week? And he probably would have said, oh, I don't know, man, just listen. And whatever else happened from that point on, after just listen, whether he said listen or didn't, the rest of the poem just took shape that night listening to the music. Someone in France labeled what I do as poesy musicale.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, that's great. It was better than being called a beatnik poet or a post-beat poet or a jazz poet. You know, they felt what I did was
musical poetry.
Yeah, musical poetry, or poetry that had musicalness to it. And they feel that more in countries that don't speak my language because they're getting the rhythm.
Yeah, and they're hearing your inflections.
Right, the inflections, particularly if it's a great gig and you're with musicians and you're all flying together.
Yeah.
And yeah, in a way, you become a musical instrument. I just feel that sometimes people try to equate the two a little too much.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, though, because now you're making me think in a different direction, because when you listen to Naima, la da da da,
yeah,
la da 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 da, it's pure poetry.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, so I guess I have to take back what I said yesterday.
Okay, and, that's fair.
Yeah, and, you know, I still think if... if we were maybe 5 minutes into this conversation, or we had continued to talk about it yesterday when I said it,
yeah,
I could probably articulate it better. But now,
sure,
the more I'm thinking about it, I'm saying, oh, come on, man. I mean, you know, Naima is pure poetry. But
we're talking about the music telling a story. The story you think it tells if you're going to talk about the music telling a story. Whether it's an examination or an untitled original, the music is always saying something and giving and teaching and translating, asking. If you're going to tell what the music is talking about, say what the music is saying, say that the music has something to say, that it's telling a story. Even if you gotta search your imagination. To look for heroes and such, and personal princesses pounding the dust trails to free themselves from happy endings that all end happily precarious in the end. There's a violent romance in the cobbles. The music tells you how modern the past can be sometimes. Look there, the music's past us. The music's told us. The music's met us and spoke to us as we listened and spoke back and woke up one star-rained civilized night to breathe its ribcage, to eat its dust-cobbled flags and tattooed trees, to paint its walls, to yawn and tell its story. The music woke us one night.
There's stuff on some incomplete directions that never made it to the CD, and like happens with every CD.
Yeah.
So when this was put together, and however it was being programmed, I wanted to end with the music woke us one night, but I didn't want that to be the final ending because I didn't want that jazz labeling, music labeling thing. So the wind had just been written and it just kind of fell onto the end, so people are left with something different than the music woke us one night.
Yeah.
They're left with some kind of ambiguity.
Yeah.
And like I was talking about the whole doo-wop-y thing, whether they know doo-wop music or not, they're left with this beautiful melody, wind, wind, blow, wind, blow,
that
wind.
That's a doo-wop song.
It's a beautiful one, probably one of them. I don't even want to limit it to saying one of the most beautiful doo-wop songs ever written. It's just one of the most beautiful songs ever written.
I mean, which group did that one again?
Two different groups, the Jesters and the Diablos.
Uh-huh.
I'm a fan of the... The Jesters are one of my favorite doo-wop groups, but I don't know any other tunes by the Diablos except the flip side of their version of Wind, but I love the Diablos version of Wind because the guy sings it in a falsetto voice, you know,
uh-huh.
And it's a very haunting melody. In the cool summer breeze sends a chill down my spine. I mean, it's a great song, and I long for my love deep within. I know she is gone, but my love lingers on. As I did in the wind. And he goes, wind, wind, blow, wind. I mean, it's a fantastic song. It's so eerie and beautiful. And you really feel, it's one of those songs where you don't feel sentimental, you don't feel like it's a rock song, and you really feel that when the breeze is blowing, he really longs for his love deep within, and he knows she's gone, you know? I mean, it's just a fantastic song.
Yeah.
And, but, yeah, you know, I told you once, a guy interviewed me, and he hit that and got into the whole doo-wop element, which at first made me angry, and then I said, wow, this is really neat that this guy who loves jazz music the way I do knew this song and zeroed in on that element, which again kind of crawls back to the beginning of the conversation tonight about being born in Brooklyn, because one of the things that formed me and informed me was always music. And growing up, I was not really around jazz until I was about 15 or 16, and the music that informed me the most as a kid was so-called doo-wop music and other elements that came out of doo-wop music.
His hand in his pocket, a double-breasted day, the wind quietly turning pages of me, a photo from a distance, the kabuki girl in the poster looking so much better than gourmet, and the sound the door makes as it closes, and the sound the wall makes as it laughs at my wisdom. When I was young, the young man says, I used to. Wind, wind, blow, wind, blow, wind, blow, wind, blow, wind, blow, wind, blow, wind. And the noise the traffic makes, and having a lot of fun getting out of it. Wind, blow, wind, blow, wind, blow, wind, blow, wind, blow, wind, blow, wind.
which groups in particular were some of your favorites?
Well, until 60s rock came along, which I resisted for a long time because I had already been in jazz. I mean, groups like the Cadillacs, this one record I'm talking about, the Paragons, Meet the Jesters. I mean, I collected 45s, so I had tons of 45s, and there were always songs by groups that always knocked me out, like the Elegantes, Where Are You, Little Star, and yeah, certain Dion and the Belmont songs, and of course songs by the Skyliners. I mean, there were so many great songs.
You ended up being in a, I guess, a doo-wop group at some point?
For a little bit. We never got any further than the Street Corner, but yeah, yeah. I was in one, yeah. We named ourselves after the avenue we hung out in front of the pizza place on. We were called the J-Tones.
Oh, right.
Where are you, little star?
Where are you?
Oh, 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 ra-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da
I love her.
Yeah, you just heard
Thin Line.
Sorry. You just heard The Paragons, Twilight, and before that, Dion and the Belmonts, Where Are You, Little Star, as Steve mentioned, were some of his favorite groups back in the day, early days. But, okay, so here's the last segment of the interview with Steve Dalashinsky, and I want to say thanks a lot to Steve for, you know, putting up with, I guess it was something like 4 hours of talking. I guess I put up with a lot of it, too, but in the end, it turned out to be a great conversation. So, and, you know, we got the best parts here for you today. But I'll be playing more of his work in the future, probably sometime in the next month or so. So thanks again to Steve Dalashinsky. And you can check him out online. I posted various links on WRIR.org if you're interested.
And what was the story behind this one?
The story, as I remember it, were two exhibits I saw. One
talking
by
about
a,
One Thin Line?
A kind of post-surreal abstract artist named Mark Toby, whose paintings look very similar to something I learned in the last couple of years called Asemic writing. They kind of look like, you know, Asian writing, but it's all just, it's very abstract. And it was Mark Toby, and I think an exhibit of Asian or possibly Indian art that were about bodhisattvas. And I started writing the line, I think, watching the Toby exhibit. And then the poem was based on both of these two art exhibits. And I think, like I had mentioned to you the other time, I think Yuko actually called me to dinner and said, "Bodhi, your food's getting cold." Maybe that part I threw in.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and whatever it was, the first chapbook that ever came out of my stuff that someone else published was called One Thin Line, and like I said, he paraphrased the poem in the beginning by saying, "There's one thin line from my heart to my head," or whatever that line is, but he didn't use the poem in the book, he just used the title of the poem. And I think what happened is the poem became so confusedly organic that the idea of not knowing whether you're of this world or the other world. The whole idea of one thin line and many faces. She calls me to dinner, bodhisattva, time to eat. I wiggle and squiggle and squirm about the room. Severe pain in my rectum, all places. So many small nothings to be done, which goes back to the same thing of people dance for nothing and talk for nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dinner is getting cold. You know, then you get the normal language. I should have never put it on the table before you sit down.
Yeah.
And then the idea of, again, getting caught up in the world of the other and in the metaphysical world at the same time as the physical world where, you know, I speak in one tone or another trying to reach the source. The horse and cart carry my voice along. That was, I think that image was actually, the horse and cart image was based on one of these bodhisattva paintings. Of a horse
that you just seen.
That I had seen that day. And Try to Relax, I think, is based on her real language. And internally, when I said I want to, but they won't let me, you know, they meaning, you know, everything possible, the entire they of the world, you know, because when you're paranoid, you know, usually it's always them. You know, I say I want to relax, but, you know, they won't let me, flinging my arms about in all directions. That's a kind of referencing the many-armed Buddha, you know, thing. You know, I don't, because I don't say my two arms, I say my arms. And when I ever look at this poem, which I haven't done in many years, that line always makes me feel like I have at least 6 or 8 arms I'm about. You know, please, please, you know, I feel so, I don't know what it was that I didn't finish when I said I feel so, swallowing the elixir of immortality, waiting for my words to return. And and probably the peacock image might have been from one of those paintings. And you know, then I got back to reality again. You should eat more greens, because Yuko's continually telling me to eat more vegetables. And for 30 years she's been telling me that, and I don't do it. So this kind of goes in and out of the surreality of these paintings, a world that we'll never know if did these bodhisattvas really ride around on chariots, or did they actually even exist? And and, you know, so you know, I go into an image from the painting of peacock carry me onward, and she goes back into saying, eat more greens, and I'm spitting the feathers of the peacock out of my mouth, and and then whoever the hell I'm yelling at, help, help, oh, infinite light, whatever that, there you go, we got eternal and we got infinite here, and I scream from behind like gas, meaning that I use these references a lot in poems about screaming without getting the words out, you know, being mute, and kind of that idea of screaming and never being heard because you're not really getting it out.
One thin line and many faces. She calls me to dinner. Bodhisattva, time to eat. I wiggle and squiggle and squirm about the room. Severe pain in my rectum. So many small nothings to be done. Bodhisattva, your food is getting cold. I should never put it on the table before you sit down. True. I speak in one tone or another, trying to reach the source. The horse and cart drag my voice along slowly. Try to relax, she says. I want to, but they won't let me. Flinging my arms about in all directions. Please, please, I feel so... Swallowing the elixir of immortality, waiting for my words to return. Peacock, carry me onward. Bodhi, you should eat more greens. I spit its feathers from my mouth. Help, help, O infinite light. I scream from behind. Like gas. I am only one thin line with a heart at one end and a head at the other. Part, come together, here I am, part of the blooming aspect, a speckled drown in the spectacle. Three dreamers speculating about their scent. Mein Chellum Hadichum. Mein Chellum Hazem. Three fiddlers caught in a stemkin. Three flowers lost in a boo. Manochandra, Emanush, Makuhalu, Emanush. Three sitters standing by a stairway. Three standers sitting in a grove. Mirko Chaluya. Mirko Chaluya Makrahabali. Three stamens. Three pistols. Three glasses of wine. Thank you.
Emanush. Emanush.
Three horses, three strikers, three fibs.
This poem, Three Orchids for Niblock, what are all these words? Mind, Chelem, Hazem,
okay,
Emunesh,
all...
Manut. Chandra
right.
Chaloya Makruhabali.
I don't know what they are.
You don't know?
I made them
you
up.
Just made those words up.
Made them up while listening to the music at Merkin Hall, writing the poem. Niblock, Phil Niblock is a composer, a guy I know pretty well.
Yeah.
This was a concert of his music, and I think one of the pieces he wrote was called Three Orchids,
uh-huh.
or Orchids. He wrote a piece that had the word orchids in it, and I think it was Three Orchids, and that's where the title comes from. And the piece was written listening to the music. I think it was written listening to a few of the pieces, even though it's a short poem. And
so these are just made-up words?
They're made-up words, and some of them might be words that have other words in them that had to do with his music or whatever was happening that night, and I might have rewritten the words or made up sounds. It's because I've been getting very bored lately, going to a place that makes no sense, and it doesn't have to make sense as long as it has some kind of musical quality or sound quality to it.
Yeah, it would seem that these kind of poems would be where sort of the line between music and poetry would be blurred in a lot of ways.
Yeah, like I read that Three Orchids for Niblock in a little session in Japan to like eight housewives. They were taking English, and the woman who was teaching them English was a very nice lady, but it was apparent she didn't care whether they learned English or not. And
obviously.
And I read them this poem after reading them a couple other poems, and I didn't think I was going to read them this poem, but I decided to end this hour by reading them a poem that had a lot of words that were not words, to show them that sometimes it doesn't matter whether you understand language or not, because I said I wrote these words and I don't understand them.
But you get something from them.
Right, and they did. They got something great from them, because...
Kodesh, is that a made-up word?
No, that's a Hebrew word which means, I was told it means God's breath on the water, and then my Israeli friend said it's not exactly what it means, but that's kind of as close as you get.
Wow.
I first heard
God's
the word
breath on the water.
Yeah, I heard the word when I was doing a reading in Boston. This guy brought me to Boston to read with him, and I read with him, and he told me the word, and I started reciting the word with these poems I had written on the bus going to Boston. And then I did a gig based around the poems in that book you mentioned, Dream Book.
Yeah.
I did a gig based on Dream Book and Water Creatures, and I did it with a dancer, and Ruach HaKodesh became one of the center piece lines that I kept repeating and repeating in the gig. And yeah, so Ruach HaKodesh actually does have a meaning. It's kind of beautiful. It's got a great sound. And when I found out what it meant, even whether you're an agnostic or a shmostic or a whatever, I mean, it's beautiful, you know, whether there is such a thing or not. I mean, God's breath on the water is kind of really beautiful. And you do get that, you know, those old images of God being the guy with his leaning over the cloud with his hand out touching Adam, and in this case, like the old cartoon of a big blown-up cloud that looks like a guy, you know, blowing on the water to start a storm or just to calm your nerves. I think of it more as to calm your nerves. I mean, God's breath on the water. It's kind of like giving life to everything. I mean, it's kind of it's kind of really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
You know, too bad I don't believe in all that stuff, and then I'd be a whole different person.
Well, the idea of the breath of life, too, I mean,
a
lot of poets who read their poetry aloud, and I'm sure you consider this, too, but the breath has to flow in order to keep it up for a whole poetry reading.
I think it varies from poet to poet, you know, because, I've seen a lot of people read the way I used to read, just flat and dull and boring.
Yeah.
And then you have to just hope that the poetry is good enough that it carries itself.
Right.
The guy who's reading it doesn't know how to carry it. And you know, I've learned to carry it more, and I think that's why, finally, even though I still don't believe I'm in a performer category, there's a part of me that's blurring those two boundaries, and so be it, especially if I'm having fun, and whether you get all the words or not, I'm giving the words a chance to breathe.
You're listening to If Music Could Talk.
If Music Could Talk?
Yeah, If Music Could Talk.
I wish we knew that right away.
Isn't that cool?
We could have a whole different conversation.
Yeah. It's called If Music Could Talk. And that's an old song by The Clash on the album Sandinista. And the cool thing about the song is that they got Joe Strummer on one side and I guess Mick Jones on the other. And they're both just babbling these words, poems, and it's in stereo, so they're both talking over each other, and then there's this really nice saxophone line throughout the whole thing in right down the center, you know. So that's where I got the name of the show.
Okay, all you cats and kitties out there in music land.
That was actually an intro to an old doo-wop show in the 50s. This guy Jocko's Rocket Ship, he started every show with, hey, all you cats and kitties out there in radio land. Hey, all you cats and kitties out there in radio land, this is Dollar Shinsky, and you're listening to If Music Could Talk on WRIR. Well, I'll talk to you soon. This was fun.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay, take care.
You got it.
Okay, you've been listening to If Music Could Talk on WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Indie Radio. It's just a couple minutes after 9 o'clock on Sunday night, the 21st, and... Thank you.